Good morning. This panel will hear the first case, and then we will take a short break to bring on the next panel. The first case is United States v. Huerta, number 251050. Mr. Sandiford, you may proceed.
Good morning. I'm Dean Sandiford from the Federal Defender's Office, and I'm here for Noah Huerta. The issue in this case is whether the officers had reasonable suspicion to believe Mr. Huerta was armed and dangerous. And in finding that they did have reasonable suspicion, the district court relied primarily on two factors. The radio broadcast to stop the vehicle just to be on the safe side because Mr. Marshall looked somewhat similar to the suspect, and the officers' belief that Mr. Marshall and Ms. Hampton were trying to distance themselves from the vehicle when they walked towards the convenience store. These factors did not add up to reasonable suspicion, and the additional facts cited by the government don't change the equation. First, the radio broadcast wasn't even a hunch that Mr. Marshall was the suspect.
I'm sorry, you're going so fast.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll slow down. I'm sorry, Judge Kelly. First, the radio broadcast wasn't even a hunch that Mr. Marshall was the suspect. The detective essentially told the officers, he looks kind of like him, so stop him just in case. In other words, the detective didn't think he was the suspect, but couldn't rule him out as a possibility. Second,
you didn't accurately state what exactly was said. He didn't say, stop him just in case. He said something about get him out of the area. And there's some ambiguity as to what he said about stopping him. Just in case, what that related to.
I don't think there is any ambiguity about that. You're right that I didn't quote him verbatim. I was paraphrasing. But, you know, the government makes this argument that maybe the just to be on the safe side was just to be on the safe side, stop him out of the area.
Right.
That's what you're getting
what
at,
I'm
right?
Referring to, yes.
The district court didn't read it that way. The district court understood it like we did. And that just to be on the safe side, we need to stop the vehicle. That's how the district court understood it.
And is that a fact finding then?
I think it's a fact finding. It's at page 176 of volume 3, and if you're interested in looking at it. And it's really the only plausible reason. And I guess before I get to that, none of the officers testified that way either. No one below suggested that this just to be on the safe side was a modified the out of the area. No one suggested that. That's a first time on appeal assertion by the government. And really the only plausible way to understand it is that the just to be on the safe side is about the reasons for the stop. And that's because the justification for the stop was very weak. It was just, you know, they parked nearby. He looks somewhat similar. Stop him just to be on the safe side. That makes a lot of sense to say just to be on the safe side when those are the reasons that you're giving for the stop.
Counsel, could I just ask you to back up?
Sure.
For a general question.
Of course.
And that is, does this appeal ultimately turn on whether the officers reasonably suspected that Mr. Marshall was the shooting suspect?
I think that that is an important fact in the case for sure. I don't know if it turns entirely on that because the district court relied on other things. The government relies on other things. But I think that is a key factor in the case.
Well, if they did reasonably suspect Mr. Marshall, doesn't it follow that they could reasonably suspect that Mr. Huerta had access to a gun in the Durango?
We have not argued otherwise. I think that that's probably right.
Okay.
To be as straightforward as I can. But we don't think that the radio broadcast gave him reasonable suspicion because reasonable suspicion is a reasonable, articulable, individualized basis for thinking you have the right person. This detective didn't think he had the right person. He thought, maybe it's him, let's rule him out. I doubt it's him, let's rule him out. That's what just to be on the safe side means. It means, I doubt this is a problem, but just check it out just in case. The officers understood him this way, apparently, because they waited until they saw a traffic infraction to stop the car. They didn't think what the detective told them gave them reasonable suspicion to stop the car.
Well, excuse me. Didn't they identify the first, quote, black car as having been involved? And then the second car pulls up behind it. And the people get out and they go into the apartment or whatever. And they come back out and get back into a white car.
That's right.
Okay. And then they drive off.
That's correct. That's correct. But the first car that they drove in on, they happened to park behind this black SUV that they were watching, but they didn't interact with that vehicle in any way.
Well, there was nobody in that vehicle.
There was nobody in the vehicle, but they were parking on a public street in front of, in a high-density residential area. They didn't do anything to even suggest that they had anything to do with that black SUV. They milled around outside a little bit, according to the detective, walked into an apartment and came back out. They got into another vehicle and drove away, but that doesn't establish any connection with this black SUV. They simply did nothing to connect themselves with that SUV, which is probably why the detective just said, due to their proximity to the target vehicle. That was all there was on that, was they happened to park behind it. That's it. So I don't think that adds anything to reasonable suspicion. The district court didn't focus on that factor. I think it really turns on this, you know, he looked somewhat similar, so stop the car to be on the safe side.
How much are you relying on an argument that even if there could have been some suspicion, once you get to the gas station convenience store and Mr. Marshall gets out of the car, the officers have a chance to take a look, however brief, but take a look. Are you arguing that because Mr. Marshall doesn't really look like the person in the surveillance photo, that any suspicion dissipated at that point? Is that part of your argument?
We haven't argued that in the briefs. And the reason why is because both Officers Stuper and Espinosa testified that they weren't focused on them. Now, I think that it would have been very easy for them to do this. I mean, they had a photograph of the suspect on the phone. Officer Stuper sat in his car and watched Mr. Marshall walk in front of the car. He knew that Mr. Marshall was the one who had been identified by the detective.
Based on what he was wearing.
Based on what he was wearing, his red pants and a white shirt. He had the photo right there with him. If you look at the photos, they're in the briefs. These men don't look anything alike.
But
so it would have been very.
Was there testimony that he saw their face? And I recognize you're saying you're not making this argument. I'm just wondering, was there any testimony about whether he was able to see his facial features?
Well, I don't think there was testimony about that, but we have the body cam. We have his body cam, and you can see Mr. Marshall just ambling along in front of the body cam while Officer Stuper is narrating what's happening. So he's clearly looking at him. You know, whether he testified to it or not. And, you know, I can stay on this radio broadcast if the court has more questions, but I'll talk about the distancing aspect of this too. So, you know, you defer to reasonable judgments from officers. This one was not reasonable. These people stopped for gas on their own accord. They got out of the car and started walking at a normal pace towards the gas station. While a police car pulled up behind them, he just pulled up to the pumps behind them. He didn't activate his lights. He didn't say anything to them.
Was that at the gas pumps?
That was at the gas pumps. So this idea that they were distancing themselves from the car is unreasonable because they were just doing what people do when they stop for gas.
Well, one way of looking at it is that as far as Mr. Marshall and I think it's Ms. Hampton are concerned, them getting out of the car and going in the convenience store suggests that they didn't think they were being stopped, right? But another way of looking at it is, well, from the perspective of the officers, was it reasonable for the officers to think that they were stopped and that Mr. Marshall and Ms. Hampton thought they were stopped?
I think that's the way you look at it. I think you do look at it from the officer's perspective, but I think that even from the officer's perspective, there was no basis for them to think that this was suspicious because they hadn't done anything to let Ms. Hampton and Ms. Marshall know that they were there for them at all. They just pulled up to the pump behind them. Police officers stopped for gas too. They didn't have their lights on. They didn't say anything to them. And when the second car got there and the officers immediately get out and tell them to hold up, they stop. You know, they don't try to flee. They don't try to do anything.
Did the district court make any findings? The way I read it, the district court did not rely on this as part of reasonable suspicion.
The district court did rely on this, but it wasn't like a factual finding. The district court didn't say, as a matter of fact, right, they are distancing. What the district court did was say, I think it was reasonable for the officers to think that they were distancing, which is, you know, part of the reasonable suspicion. That's a legal conclusion.
Was it argued that this individual didn't have a big bushy beard?
Yes, that was argued below. They pointed that out.
Was that significant in your opinion?
I think that's significant. I mean, I think there's a lot of things significant. If you're looking at the two photographs, it takes a second to realize these are different people. You know, it's clear that Mr. Marshall was not the shooter. He didn't have anything to do with that. And the only reason they got pulled over, or they didn't even get pulled over, but the only reason the officers kind of went after them was because they happened to be parked nearby. Oh, the tag was the pretextual reason for the stop, sure. But the reason the detective wanted them to go after them is just these people were minding their own business. They parked behind a car that the police were watching, and all of a sudden they just get caught up in all of this. They didn't have anything to do with it. I mean, I think that is absolutely clear on this record.
Where was the detective when he got a look at Mr. Marshall?
It's not clear from the record. So we know that he's watching. He's doing kind of undercover surveillance, but we don't know exactly where he is. The only thing we have is the broadcast. But we can infer certain things from that, which is that he could see the guy pretty well. He identified his race. He identified his clothing. He identified the race and clothing of the two women that were with him. So this wasn't a situation where he could barely see them. He described them with some level of specificity.
Well, you indicated that you could read the distancing two ways. One from the reasonable, what the district court said, which is the officers reasonably viewed it to be trying to basically avoid them. The other being, as you are saying, that it was just, they're just going into the convenience store. How is it error?
I'm not saying you can read that two ways. I was responding to Judge Matheson's questions about which perspective do you look at it from their perspective or the officers. You look at it from the officers.
Right.
But their judgment has to be reasonable. And our argument is that their judgment was not reasonable.
Okay.
That there was nothing suspicious about them walking to the store when they stopped for gas.
I just was reminded of something that the government argued, but I don't remember how you responded, which is that there was some statement by one of the individuals in the vehicle about that seemed to maybe indicate that they knew, the individuals in the vehicle knew that they were either being followed or that the officers were looking for them, something about them following, recognizing that they were following, or they turned around, she said.
Yeah.
Turned around and essentially after she was advised of what the reason for the stop was.
Right. Yeah. She's kind of like.
She said, what's the real reason? You turned around, something along that nature.
That's
what
right.
Was
she
that?
Does.
What? How do you read that?
Well, we responded to this in our reply brief, but, you know, I think all you can read into that is she saw them. I mean, she saw them turn around. She's
turn
the backseat.
Turn around where?
It's not really clear.
That's kind of important, isn't it?
I don't think
it
is.
Did she see him back out on the street and they turned around and flipped around and started following him? Because that would indicate they did know.
I don't think you can read that much into what she's saying. You know, I don't think you can. And plus, this is one person who's a backseat passenger in the car. It's totally speculative to think that anyone else noticed this. Like maybe she happened to be looking out her window and saw the cops turning around.
Okay.
She didn't say that she thought that they were focused on them. She said, I saw you turn around and come into the gas station. But, you know, she knows at the time she's talking to the officers that they're there for them, but nothing about that statement suggests that she knew that at the time. And if you look at, you know, Mr. Marshall and Ms. Hampton's behavior, they don't look like they're trying to get away from the police. They look like any other person stopping for gas, walking to the convenience store. Even the district court said they're just walking at a normal speed. And when the officers approach Mr. Huerta, you know, he's starting to stand up. He's holding his phone. He's in the car. You have the body cam of that. He looks totally bewildered and confused. He was clearly very surprised that the police were there for them. He was the other passenger in the back seat. So I think if you look at this in the totality, you can't put much weight on this one passenger in the back seat who happened to notice that the police turned around to follow them. It just says nothing about what the rest of them knew.
What do you think was the turning point for the district court in making its decision? What do you think the district court relied on the most?
The district court relied on two factors. I don't think the district court put weight on one more than the other. They were really the radio broadcast and the and the officer's judgment that they were distancing. You know, he starts with the radio broadcast. I think that makes sense just as a temporal matter. I don't read the district court's ruling as putting more weight on one than the other. I see I'm about out of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel?
May it please the court, Craig Fansler for the United States. Seven facts made the pat down of Mr. Huerta necessary to protect officer safety. First, the officers believed that there was a shooting suspect in the car.
How did they believe that?
They believed that based on the radio transmission. And so if I can just break down and respond a little bit to what Mr. Huerta said, they heard on the radio, and there was factual findings below, that there was someone somewhat similar in the vehicle.
Somewhat similar. He had a big, bushy black beard, and it was not similar at all.
Yeah, I don't think that's quite what the record is below. They're even in the initial motion to suppress that the defense that Mr. Huerta filed, that's volume 1, page 13. They note that there were similarities between the two. It was a black man with facial hair. One of the distinctive features that he was bald was obscured by a hat.
The facial hair was completely different. One, the suspect had bushy facial hair, and this man had a light goatee and a mustache.
It certainly was.
He was very dark-skinned, and the suspect was very light-skinned, and that was obvious.
It certainly was.
Just no similarity at all.
I will note that.
There was none.
I guess I had two responses to that. First is that what the full radio transmission notes, and if you kind of listen to the very beginning of it, the detective says, I have kind of a long eye on him. Long eye meaning I'm not right up close. He's from a distance. And so, you know, he's not right up close. There were certainly similarities in build, too. But I think putting all that aside, I think
they don't know that, though. They don't know there's similarities in build. These officers don't. Right.
Right. And so I think the important thing is how would a reasonable officer have heard the word somewhat similar from a detective who's been investigating this case? They don't have any previous experience. They're relying on a detective. It's reasonable for them to rely on that detective. And so they hear somewhat similar, and they both testify, and there's clear finding of facts below that when they heard that, they thought this guy could be the suspect. There's a suspect of the shooting in the car. And so that's what the officers making the stop had in their mind.
And they have no obligation to say what are the similarities or to determine independently whether they can rely on that judgment. They can just rely on it regardless of how off it was. Is that what your argument is?
They can rely on a detective who's investigating the case who doesn't air a lot of additional details and when they're acting in the moment. I think to the extent that the Mr. Herrick's point is that...
No details.
That's correct. Just the somewhat similar.
No details at all. Is there authority? What's your best authority for that? Situation where they're given no details at all.
Yeah, so I think it lines up... with this court's kind of, I think if I can step back, it lines up pretty well with the court's kind of mistake of fact type of cases, because what they're really arguing is whether the detective could have or should have known that this wasn't the suspect. And what those cases, I think, say.
They didn't even say they were suspects. They were just to be safe.
Yeah, so there's a separate question.
I had no idea what they were looking for other than the fact that they followed a white car that had been parked behind a black car that had been parked behind another black car.
Yeah, so let me turn to that, and then I'll come back to Judge Moritz's question. And that's just to be on the safe side and whether that conveyed something to a reasonable officer hearing it.
Well, they could do that to anybody. They could say, let's be on the safe side. We'll just take everybody out of the car and pat them down because we want to be safe.
Right. And I think officers do all kinds of things for safety. To me, that phrase doesn't add a lot to the meaning here.
That doesn't make it legal.
Sure. And they're focusing on what a kind of a person saying that would mean, I think, is what Mr. Huerta focused on, and not what a reasonable officer would hear when another officer says just to be on the safe side. So let's just take an example from this case that I think is more in line with what an officer would be thinking. Let's say Officer Espinoza, after discovering that first gun in the back seat, would say, you know, I think we should search the rest of the car just to be on the safe side. No reasonable officer hearing that is going to think that he doesn't think there's any other gun in the car. They're just trying to exclude it. Officers hearing that are going to know that guns are frequently.
Well, they apparently thought that it was very odd that these people would go into the convenience store. And that's a totally unreasonable conclusion. Everybody pulls up to the gas station, either goes in to pay or goes to go buy some cookies or something. Now, that doesn't mean that they're trying to avoid capture.
I don't think that's at all unreasonable. I don't think that's at all unreasonable. I think there are clear findings of fact in that issue below. What we have below is that this car pulls into the gas station. The police car actually turns around and follows it into the gas station, pulls behind it, parks behind it.
Maybe
officers see.
Maybe it needed gas also. So far I haven't seen anything that says to me, this is reasonable suspicion at this point.
Yeah, and so I think that's where someone sees a police car actually turn around and follow it into the gas station, park right behind it. The officers then watch the people distance or separate from their car based on their training experience.
Was it two sets of pumps or one set of pumps at the gas station?
So there's the way it's situated is the white Durango pulls up to the first pump. The police car pulls up behind it a little
pump.
Past the second pump, but close to the second pump. There's a whole nother row of pumps right next to it that no one's in. So the police car just wanted gas, presumably would not follow another car, park right behind it.
Was there any indication these people knew the police car was following them?
I mean, I guess I'd have two responses to that. I think the inquiry is whether a reasonable officer would think that the other car had seen it turn around, follow it into the gas station at the same time, park right behind it. But then there is, I guess, to the question of, is there any kind of further evidence that they actually did know? I guess that's where I would point you back to the body cam with Crystal Gordon on Officer Parker's body cam, where she specifically says, yes, we saw you turn around.
She didn't say that. She did not say, yes, we saw you turn around. She said something about you turned around. And
yeah.
And then she said, so what's your real reason essentially for stopping us as opposed to defective tags, which they just informed her. But I didn't see where any of your officers testified whether they turned around, whether they were following them, even for a few feet. Whether they, you know, what they did ahead of time, and it's your burden to show that. If you're going to show that they were being followed and they basically should have known and that her statement meant something, don't we need to have your officer saying, yes, we whipped around and they saw us do that or they must have seen us do that, something.
Yeah, I just want to.
Is there anything from your officers about turning around or following them for any period?
Yeah, I'll just respond first to what you said about what Gordon said. I do have the exact quote here. She said, but sir, you turned around before we hopped out of the car. So
before
what's the real
we hopped
excuse?
Out of the car, which I didn't understand whether that meant two blocks away, a block away in the parking lot. I mean, before we hopped out of the car to me means you turned around in the parking lot, but it's not clear. So I looked to see what other officers testified and I didn't see anything about that.
Yeah, what we do have is the finding of fact below on page 166 of Volume 3 that Officer Stuper pulled into the Circle K and parked directly behind the Durango.
Yeah. The turnaround.
That's correct. We have, I guess it wasn't testimony below, but in Volume 1, page 117, we have Officer Parker's written report, who was driving the vehicle, that talks about turning his car around after the Durango passed him and then following him into the gas station. I think if
where is that?
That is Volume 1, page 117. It's Officer Parker's written report. And so, again, I think if the inquiry is what is a reasonable officer, what's in their mind as they follow this, turn their car around, follow them into the gas station, park directly behind them when there's two free pumps in the next row, and then see after a couple of seconds the two individuals in the front seat, including the shooting person they believe to be a shooting suspect.
Slow down. Okay, so we do have something in the record saying that the officers did a flip around and followed him into the parking lot. We do have something in the record. We don't have any finding. We do have a finding of fact about that.
The finding of fact is specifically to Officer Stuper's testimony that he pulled in, into
right,
the Circle
okay,
K
yeah.
and parked directly
okay.
behind the Durango. It's not
but
about
we do
around.
Have in the record, in the testimony, that they whipped around and followed him. And we have one witness saying, recognizing that they turned around.
That's correct, Your
and
Honor.
Was that witness one of the two that walked into the store, or was she the one, one of the three, I guess?
She was one of the two in the back seat,
okay.
So Mr. Huerta and her.
So she did not walk in the car, get up and walk out.
She was not one of the ones that
okay.
walked into the store.
And we don't know whether she passed anybody else in the car, saw the turnaround.
We don't know specifically that.
Okay.
And so if I can move on, I guess, to the other reasons, so beyond kind of what the officers believe based on the radio transmission, the distancing, we can come back to that. We then have, I think, the third fact is that Mr. Huerta reacted to the police presence with evasive behavior and movements. The record talks about looking left and right. We see him reaching and the officer saying twice, don't reach. We see him not listening, and there's plenty in the record and factual findings related to that. So we have his particular movement behaviors.
The video ran in just a couple of seconds, much shorter than you've been able to describe it. I mean, there was hardly anything to see, wasn't there?
It certainly happened very quick, where he got out of the car, his hands
were
down.
Somebody can make an assessment about evasiveness and nervousness in a matter of 1 or 2 seconds.
I do think there's factual findings and testimony below, both about kind of how he was looking left and right as he's getting out of the car. There's the fact that his hands are down at his waistband.
Is that unusual to look left and right, have your hands down by your waist? Why isn't that just the way people get out of a car?
I think, again, what's unusual here is that the officers, by this point, there's two cars behind them, one with lights on. They're approaching him. The guy's getting out.
Then maybe he does get a little nervous if there's a police car with lights on. What's unusual about that? Wouldn't anybody get nervous?
And I think that's, again, where the factual findings below are important. And
what was the factual finding on this?
Yeah, just that he was very squirmish, that was unusual, that the way he was squirmish indicated an intent to conceal. And so there's a whole set of findings about both Officer Stuper and Espinoza's testimony about kind of his squirmishness, the way he's looking left and right, the way he's not listening to their questions, and how that kind of indicated.
You have a factual finding of squirmishness, but you also have to get to a legal finding of reasonable suspicion. So how does squirmishness get you there at all?
Yeah, so I think the officers explain this, that the squirmishness is kind of turning your body so the officers have a more difficulty accessing parts of the body
okay.
where you would conceal.
I don't want to belabor the point, but can I get back to the detective just for one question?
Yeah.
So the detective tells the officers that this person, who ends up being Mr. Marshall, looked like the suspect. I know that this is a bit hypothetical, but let's assume that the detective said that to the officers, but the detective had no basis at all to think that Mr. Marshall looked like the suspect, but said that to the officers anyway. Would that be enough to defeat reasonable suspicion in this case?
I do think in that case it kind of turns on the kind of mistake of fact precedence that this court has, whether a reasonable officer confronting him at the scene could reasonably rely on this detective. You look at things like whether they had reason to know this identification wasn't accurate.
Okay, so it's the mistake of fact line of cases we'd need to look at.
I think that would be appropriate, like the Walraven case or the Jacquez case from 2008, the cases where you really look at where the officer on the scene doesn't have fully accurate information from another officer down the road, whether they were reasonable to rely on
Thank
it.
You.
I do think, to Judge Kelly's question to Mr. Huerta, another factor that's important is the geographic association of these persons to the black SUV involved in the shooting. I don't think that's a mere propinquity type of argument. I think that's a separate thing in geographic association. I see my time's up. I don't know if I can just finish this thought.
Why don't you finish your thought?
Geographic association is something the court has found important in cases like U.S. versus Connor in 2012 and other cases. I think it's something that has value in this case.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. I think Mr. Sandiford had about 11 or 12 seconds, and he went over a bit. So let's give would you take 30 seconds if we gave it to you?
Sure.
All right.
Thanks. I'd like to address the turning around thing first. This is apparently in Officer Parker's police report. This is not something anyone talked about below at all. So I'm not familiar with the exact words that are used in that. But I think that regardless, let's just posit that someone in the car saw them turn around and follow them in. They pulled up at a gas pump by themselves, not being stopped by the police is what I mean. You know, two people get out of the car and amble towards the convenience store. I think that even if someone knew that the police had followed them in, why is that suspicious? They weren't running. They weren't fleeing. You know, you can see them thinking like, well, you know, until the police like put their lights on or tell us to stop, we're just going to assume that we can go about our business. You know, I do think it would be different if they had gotten out of the car and run, you know, but that's not what happened. Thanks for the extra time. Okay. I appreciate it.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both of you for your arguments this morning. The case will be submitted and counsel are excused. I assume, Mr. Sandiford, this is your only argument this morning? Okay, then counsel are excused and we'll take a short break.